This is Global Air Force with your host, Jim Rome.
Today we have a classic program from the past. Praise God, it is another beautiful day. Kelly Bleeker sent me this YouTube, and it is a powerful presentation of four dreams Robert Henderson had in regards to our past president. She said, Jim, please listen to this video. I agree with it wholeheartedly. Now, she went on to say, I'm a Canadian, but Donald Trump's success affects everyone everywhere. I agree with Robert Henderson and all who have any relationship with God that they must hold up Donald Trump in prayer. So here it is, Robert Henderson and the four dreams that he had.
Yeah, with President Trump, the reason I am so strongly such a supporter, because I believe with every fiber of my being, he is the one that God chose. And the reason I believe that is because when he first announced his candidacy, what was it, 2016, or maybe it was actually 2015 when he announced it. Well, Mary and I immediately said, he's the guy. I mean, we just knew in our spirit. Well, in 2016, March of 2016, I had a dream that President Trump called me on the phone and said, I need for you to do a conference on July the 4th, 2016, to shift things concerning the election for me. And so I won't go into all that. But the bottom line is it's in the book. We did that in the book on President Trump. We did that. And I stood the Lord told me, I will let you stand in my council. And when you do, I want you to decree a judgment against Hillary Clinton and against her campaign out of James 1:11. And that's what I did. I said, I decree that Hillary Clinton's campaign is as the grass of the field, and she is as the flower of the grass, and the burning, searing, exposing heat of God will cause everything to be exposed, and she will wither away. And that's exactly what happened. That's exactly what happened. And I knew God had given me that piece of the assignment. So I did that. So after President Trump was elected, before his inauguration, I had the second dream. And in this dream, he comes to me and he asks me to be on his cabinet. And so long story short, I knew I was being given an assignment in the council of the Lord to stand in behalf of him and his administration. And so I have endeavored to do that. Then the third dream came after his inauguration. And in this dream, he came to me and he said, I want you to be my running mate for my second election. And now he was just starting his first one. And I knew that he was asking me to be the running mate. And I woke up and I thought, why am I dreaming this? And the Lord said to me, because what I intend to do through him, it'll take two terms to do. And I need for you to run with him in the spirit until he's reelected. I need for you to be a part of moving things in out of the way that would try to prohibit that. So I've been faithfully doing this for 3+ years, if not more. Well, yeah, going on more. And so I've been doing this. So what happened was about a month ago, before any of this coronavirus stuff started coming the way it's coming. I mean, it was being kind of reported about China and all that kind of thing. But before any of it happened, I have this fourth dream. And in this dream, I'm standing next to President Trump. Before a table, and I'm bumping up against him with my shoulder, and I'm playing with him. I'm in my dream. I'm joking with him and playing with him, and he looks at me, and he says, "This is the presidency of the United States of America," and I suddenly realized I was not taking serious. I wasn't taking the position and him serious. And I felt very chastised, very embarrassed, humiliated even. I was like, oh, you know, I'm so sorry. And you know, everything that went with it. And then as we're standing, so that he did that. And then he has a newspaper that and he's got it before him, and he's looking at the financial section of it, and he's running his hand over it. And he turns the page. And he runs his hand over the financial section. He turns the page. And he does this several times. He turns the page. When he gets through looking at it, he takes it. He folds it. He folds it a second time. And he hands it to me. And I wake up. And I knew the Lord was saying. This is before any of this stuff. I knew the Lord was saying. Number one, I don't think that I wasn't taking serious. I don't know how I could have been more serious. I felt that God was letting me feel his chastisement that he was directing toward the toward us as God's people. Mm-hmm. That literally we have not been taking serious what's at stake. We've not been taking serious this whole issue of President Trump and his position as the president. And that the church needs to take serious this time that we're in. Then I also knew, this is way before the corona thing, I also knew that there was being plotted something to disrupt the economy of the United States of America. And that President Trump was overlooking and overseeing this thing, watching very carefully what was going. But in that he folded and handed to me, God was giving me and those who would join with me an assignment to pray for this economy, that it would not be disrupted so that they could use it to cause President Trump's reelection to fail. Mm-hmm. And I promise you that is the intent. That is the intent. That is why they're going to come after him with every power in their being. And they delight in the economy suffering. They delight in it. But God needs a people that will stand, that this economy will not be disrupted, and that and they won't be able to use that against him in this thing. I mean, I'm telling you, see, people can say, oh, I don't like President Trump. Well, to me, that is neither here nor there. I understand why people would feel the way they feel because of the abrasive. But I want to tell you something. Our system and the systems of the world were under a politically correct spirit that Donald Trump has destroyed.
Yes, yes.
And it needed to be destroyed. Because that system was designed to silence believers.
Yes.
And to stop us from having a voice and speaking up.
Yes.
And people don't understand. Marxism, one of the first strategies of Marxism is to create a politically correct climate to silence Judeo-Christian value systems.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we play right into it. Mm-hmm. Oh, he's not nice. Listen, God said to me, pray for him and call him Donald J. Trump. My president, Donald J. Trump. And I said, why do I have to do that? The Lord said, because I need for you to say he's my president, because I will do for you what I wouldn't do for him. You have a place before me in my courts and my counsel, and I will be able to do for you when you ask me that I would not be able to do for him if he were to ask.
Mm.
See, people don't understand that. The status you hold in heaven has everything to do with the prayers you can get answered. And so God said, I need for you to call him my president. And he said, in that time, all the prophetic groups that I was kind of around, they were saying, oh, we want him to be a John. We want him to be a John. We want him to be turned into a John, the beloved. He's Donald John Trumpet. Trumpet. No. And I said, and the Lord said, call him Donald J before me. He said, because Donald means world ruler. And I don't need a beloved in the White House. I need a world ruler. I need somebody that's going to challenge the one world system that they want to put into place. I need somebody to challenge that and to destroy it. And quite honestly, guys, that's why they hate him. He is demolishing globalism. He is demolishing it. And they are going to try to take him out no matter what, because they want a one world system. And so people that don't understand that, they say, well, he doesn't act like a Christian. Well, I don't even know if he is one. I hope he is. I personally think he probably is. But the bottom line is, I don't care. I don't care. God used Osiris. He used Osiris to fulfill his plan. Osiris was a very heathen king. I promise you, that piece doesn't matter. I mean, President Trump is going to stand before the Lord and give an account for himself one way or the other. Whatever he has done, just like the rest of us in our bodies, either good or bad, that's going to be between him and God. But I'm telling you right now, the hand of God is on him, because I cannot even imagine our nation and where it would be. And here's the truth. If he's not reelected, the stage has been so set right now that if the liberals get back into power, Katie bar the door. I'm telling you, they're going to take it and they're going to run down a road that I can't even imagine what life could become like in the United States, and the liberties and the attack against the church that would come. I promise you that that would happen. I mean, I got to say, I mean, right now, President Trump, and people will say, oh, it's political maneuvering. But the bottom line is he designated tomorrow as a national day of prayer. I don't know when we've had a president that's done that. I mean, I know we have our national day of prayer, but here he is saying, tomorrow I call forth a national day of prayer that we would stand to beseech God to help us and to defend us against this coronavirus. I mean, at least there's a guy in the office that recognizes we need God's help. I'm like, good Lord, help us. You know, help us to understand. So as you can see, you pull the plug. And I am very passionate. But my passion comes, I was never political. Politics did not, and they do not interest me. It's never been an issue. I knew we need to be involved, and yeah, I'll go vote, and all this kind of stuff. But there's a prophetic mandate that came on my life. To pray for President Trump. And there are times, I've never met him, there are times that I grieve over him and over his family and over the stuff that they've gone through. I mean, this man was a billionaire. Who in the heck needed this? Who needed this? And I'm thinking, only because I believe God touched him. My wife actually, she was somewhere when I was preaching. She actually shows up every now and then. No, she was somewhere with me, and I was talking about President Trump, and she said she felt the Lord said to her, the reason I had to use President Trump, she said, because, this is what she felt like the Lord said, because the one I would have used was aborted in the womb years ago. Said he wasn't my first choice, but he said I needed one to turn the nation. I needed one to stand, and the one I would have used was aborted. I don't question that at all. I don't question that at all. Because that's just the horrendousness of abortion, and how many people with divine, unbelievable destinies before God lost those destinies because they never had a chance to live life because of this whole issue of abortion. I mean, in all the things that are connected to it. So yeah, I believe we're in a very critical season. And I knew when the Lord said, I need for you to run with him in the spirit, I knew this thing wasn't going to be a cakewalk. I mean, it's like up until this happened, it was like, oh, nobody can beat him. And I gotta say, it looked that way. But I'm telling you, the things that are going on right now are game changers.
Oh, beautiful, far heroes proved in liberating strife. Self, our country loved, and mercy more than life. America, America, make God thy gold refine. Be nobleness and ever again divine. And you know, when I was in school, we used to sing it something like this. Listen here. Oh, beautiful, far spacious skies, far amber waves of grain. Purple mountain majesties above the fruited plain.
But now wait a minute. Next on our program, I'd like to remind our listeners that our country had godly roots, people that feared God. They had a living sensitivity to the presence of God, and many had the desire to be pleasing to our Creator. People believed that they had an open channel to God's ears. He heard our prayers.
Thank you for tuning in today. Today, our guest is Mark Anderson. Today, we are going to focus on Mark's new book, The Damaging Effect of the Religious Spirit in Politics. Mark, in your book, you talked about the supernatural events that happened early in our country. Actually, it was the French Indian War. That's how our country began, with supernatural events. Could you tell me a little bit in our audience about what happened?
In July 9th, 1755, you know, this young colonel was leading a troop of, he had five, I mean, four, excuse me, 100 people or soldiers with him.
Mm-hmm.
And they were headed into battle with the French. They were going alongside with British. And they were going to battle against the French and Indians. And they were headed where we now know as Pittsburgh, the city of Pittsburgh. There was a fort there.
Mm-hmm. Duquesne.
And they were headed in that direction, and they ended up getting ambushed. The French had tremendous snipers. The Indians were great marksmen. They were very deadly and very accurate. And they had said, well, kill all the officers, all the mounted officers, aim at them when they come into this valley. And if we can kill all of them, it'll be a slaughter. So the British, along with this young colonel and his 100 Virginia buckskins, were marching into this valley. And they're hidden in the rocks and the trees and behind the dead logs and stuff like that were the French and Indian. And they opened up fire. And their strategy worked perfect. They killed all the officers or severely wounded them. This young colonel was shot at, they said, 17 times. In fact, he ended up a couple horses shot out from under him. But he somehow kept riding up and down the battle lines, and he kept getting shot at. And, you know, when the battle was over, it was a massacre. Their strategy worked perfect. Reports got back to Fort Cumberland that it was a massacre and that nobody survived. Well, 8 days later, in comes this young colonel with his 100 Virginia buckskins and some of the other people that were fighting in that war. And they were amazed to see him alive because they thought for sure he was dead, but he wasn't dead. And he showed him his vest that he was wearing that day. In that vest was four bullet holes. Not one of those bullets went through his body. Not one of it touched his body. And he was alive. Here's what he said when he came into Fort Cumberland that day, July 17, 1755. He says, I now exist and appear in the land of the living by the miraculous care of providence that protected me beyond all human expectation. And the word providence referred to God. That's just how they talked about God back in those days. And then he said, I have only been an instrument in the hands of providence. There was a supernatural protection over this young colonel's life. And you know what happened is word spread about this miraculous intervention in the early stages of our country. And the most famous preacher, probably the best preacher of those days, was Samuel Davies, I should say. And he got wind of this and started preaching it from his pulpit. And the first Great Awakening hit the shores of America during that time. In fact, this intervention of God, it was talked about and written about in the public school books and shared in our public schools for the next 150 years. But let me tell you something else that was really cool. In 1770, this chief, this Indian chief, who was an excellent marksman, he had the chance of meeting this young colonel. and he was just amazed. He said, here's what he said when he met this young colonel. He says, here, I have traveled a long and weary path that I might see the young warrior of the great battle. I am come to pay homage to the man who is the particular favorite of heaven, who can never die in battle. Then he went on to say this, and I mean, this is powerful. He said, I am come to pay homage to the man who's a particular favorite of heaven, who can never die in battle, who will one day lead a great nation. And you already mentioned his name, Jim. It's George Washington, the first president of the United States. Look at how God spared this man's life.
And the supernatural event, I mean, even our freedom and our country, it was a supernatural event.
That was just one testimony. There was all kinds of testimonies, especially with George Washington. This guy could not die in battle. I mean, he same when they were fighting for our independence against the British, they had him cornered, and somehow God sends a fog in, and we get that famous picture of Washington crossing the Delaware.
Mm-hmm.
And then they ended up winning the war. That was a turning point in the war when they had Washington and his troops surrounded. And it's really awesome just the way the Lord intervened in those early days, and the word spread, and they were so connected. They were so connected to God and to prayer. One thing I should clarify is so many books have been written in recent years trying to say that our early founders were deists or agnostics or even atheists. Some have gone that far, and trying to do away with our Christian heritage. Washington was no deist. I mean, very deist is somebody say, oh, maybe there could be a God, maybe there is a God, but who cares? It doesn't matter to me one bit. It doesn't affect my life. That was not George Washington. I mean, just look at the famous painting at Valley Forge of him on his knees, praying in the woods when a guy happened to just go through the woods and see him off in the distance praying. He wasn't looking for glory. He wasn't looking for honor, but he was a man given to prayer and very learned in the scriptures. He was no deist. A lot of even preachers are buying into that rewriting of our history. They can take away that part of our history. I guarantee you they can destroy our nation from the inside out. And some have been able to do that.
Right. They've undermined them. Now, I didn't go to school 150 years ago, but we learned the story of George Washington. Some, I think we covered the supernatural events. Of course, that was very important that our country realizes that God is involved in our lives. God's involved with this country. And as I read your book and thought about it, I just sensed what a miracle for us to get free of government and people controlling and running us and using us. That freedom, you know, so valuable. And as I looked at our government today, those freedoms are eroding. And of course, our history, as you're telling me, is being degraded and eroded. Mm-hmm.
So much of it, starting in the early 1900s, there has been things going on in our country to do away with God. And even while our country was, you could say, strongly Christian, what happened is those that were God haters or atheists or even communists in those days were proactive, while the Christians stayed kind of disconnected to their church and to prayer and just kind of keeping quiet and keeping everything to the church and not being active in politics, not being active in the public square so much. And whereas the ungodly began to slowly rise and to the point where, look at where our country is today, where so much of Christian values are frowned upon and laughed and mocked at by the media or Hollywood or in the newspapers. About the only time Christians get attention probably is it's a loony committing a crime or some religious radical hate group, you know.
Right. Well, that gets me onto this one point here. We're getting God out of the equation of our government, and more people are looking for, or to government, that's men, for deliverance. But who's all to blame? I think you brought some up already, but in your book, who do you address is to blame?
You know, back in those days of the founding of our country, we had what was called the Black Robe Regiment. And these were made up of pastors and theologians and people that really honored God and they were the ones that led the Revolutionary War for our war for independence.
Yeah, the British blamed them. They blamed the, or they attributed the impetus of this.
Mm-hmm. Oh, they targeted the ministers because of their influence on society. The pastors, they not only would preach from their pulpits, but they would train up and raise up the militia. They would train up people to go into battle and to fight in those days. And so the British, more than anybody, they targeted the pastors, the leaders, the what they called the Black Robe Regiment, because of their influence in society back in those days. In fact, a lot of people don't realize this part about our history, too, is how did the Constitution come about? You know, did it just all of a sudden happen? No, there was tremendous strife with our early founders taking place where they couldn't really come to any kind of agreement in tremendous contention. And then Ben Franklin, a very strong Christian, mentioned and said, we need to go and seek the face of God. And they called for a prayer meeting. And days of prayer, out of it came our Constitution. And most of the signers of the Declaration of Independence were people who were either in ministry, or they were theologians, or they were strong Bible-believing Christians. They weren't just your nominal Christians that, you know, maybe go to church once a month or once a year. They were strong, and this is how we got the Constitution. And the very our history, when George Washington got sworn in, he didn't even want to be our president, by the way. He wanted to go back to after the wars that he fought in. He wanted to just go retire and be a farmer. But they said, if you don't become our leader, this country will fall apart. So he put his own ambitions off to the side. He chose to be our president. And when he took the oath of office, he placed his hand on the Bible and said, so help me God. The first line of business, they went down to what was called St. Paul's Chapel, not far from Ground Zero. There's a little chapel there called St. Paul's Chapel, and they had a prayer meeting.
In New York?
Yeah, to bring about this country. This country started.
Mark Anderson's new book, The Damaging Effect of the Religious Spirit in Politics. It's a history lesson. I think the point we're making is that Christians, they do have power, they do have a voice, they can take the wheel of this country. Some things God won't do, He's expecting us to do it.
There is a way. When you feel you cannot make it, there is a way. When you think you just can't take it this very day, there's a way. With the Lord, there is a peace that passes all understanding. We have a God that can lift His mighty hand and make us a way. Where there was none before. Well, I know sometimes you feel that your burden.
Thank you for listening to our program today. Global Air Force is here to bring God's love, help, and power into your life.